Great. Okay, so now that it's going to be recorded, I wanted to bring this topic up with you guys because I feel it's really important for everyone to kind of share their best practices in this, because there really isn't a golden rule for how you find new associates. It's a little different for everybody, but I think that after seeing some of the results from the survey and speaking to you guys one-on-one, that there are certain things to look for, certain ways to go about this that make it easier for you to find people to bring onto your team. So what I wanted to do is kind of break this up into two parts. And the first part today is going to be with Blair Nickel talking about his experiences in growing out his office. And then from there, I'd like to have a discussion with you guys about, you know, what you may be doing differently or some insight as to maybe elaborating on what he's been talking about, what he'll go into today. And then I compiled all of the answers from the survey that you guys took, like, probably back in October, actually. And I put all the answers together so that you guys can kind of see what everybody's thoughts are on this subject. So if we end up getting to that part faster, I'll go ahead and pull it up. I already have it queued in there ready to go if we need to today. But I'm going to go ahead and let Blair have the floor, and we'll just let the discussion start from there. So, Blair, whenever you're ready.
Yep, we'll do a couple things. I'm just looking at the list of names on here just to make sure it's just owners. Because I will bring up a topic that you guys probably don't want getting out to your associates. And it looks like we're okay. And if you're wondering why there is some sick puppy doing some heavy breathing, it's me. I just finished doing a spin class. So not trying to be sick or disgusting or anything. So so I have 5 associates, 2 business development people plus office admin. And the way I started this business back in 97, so it's been almost 20 years, I think I took the business in San Diego from, it was doing, Sherry Carroll at the time was probably only doing about $60,000 a year with the office. And then I got it up to about $250,000 to $300,000, and then very, very quickly realized that I needed to start adding associates. And one of the other main reasons for adding associates is, you know, my father and his infinite wisdom and his business wisdom, and some of you may remember him, he always taught me that, Blair, if you want to build a true company, you're going to have to start hiring people underneath you, because you got to get this business to run without you. And so that was kind of the ultimate goal. And so what I figured was that each associate can conservatively bring in about $250,000 to $300,000 of gross revenue, again, per associate. So if you remember back to the latest national meeting, my office did about a little over $1.6 million last year, and we're on track at least through the first quarter to do about the same this year. So I started off by bringing on another associate in Southern California. And then brought on office admin. Now, one of the things about bringing on another associate is the way that it used to be done many years ago is people would just bring on another associate, tell them to go find the lead sources, and kind of good luck. And we very quickly realized that that didn't work. And so one of the things I'm a big proponent of is if you're going to bring on a new associate or associate, you better find the lead sources for them, nurture those lead sources to make sure it's enough revenue for somebody, and so that they are producing good, consistent leads, and then turn it over to the new associate. So I got it up to a couple associates, and then, like I said, office admin, and then merged with Brandnet Pacific Northwest, which was my brother at the time, and then brought on another associate for Seattle, that's Charlie. And at that time, had a few associates in office admin, and very quickly realized that it was time to bring on what I call business development or marketing people. And that's when we brought on Emily Anderson, who was an awesome addition to our team. And then most recently, we brought on another new business development person down in Southern California. You guys all met her at the meeting in Long Beach, and that is our older and wiser sister, Dina Hartley. So that's my brothers and my sister. So how did I find the associates? Well, there was no secret sauce into finding my associates. Roxanne was a competitor of mine in San Diego. Watched her for many years. She was pretty good, and I just kind of figured that, hey, I could probably coach her to do better. and she's done very well down there. So right now, Roxanne consistently produces somewhere between about $300,000 and $400,000 per year. It took her about a year or two to kind of accept the coaching that Paige and I were giving her, but after she kind of bowed down and took it, she's consistently producing good revenue. And then, of course, we have Paige in Orange County, and then we added Charlie McGee in Seattle. Charlie McGee, the way that I found Charlie was he was just about to pull the trigger with the Entrepreneur Source. With a, I forget the guy's name, but last name Levy in Seattle, who I think is still the number one Entrepreneur Source office. And pretty much Levy had the entire market blocked. And Charlie was going to go work for him, and I was looking for somebody in Seattle, so I was commuting back and forth to Seattle. It was kind of a new market. Seattle had never taken off for FranNet, but I was going to take the gamble and make the investment on it. And was always kind of listening to Charlie, and I said, hey, Charlie, what do you think about coming on to my team? So it wasn't that I went out and found Charlie. It was really kind of Charlie calling me to do research on the industry. And then we brought on Michael Tilbrook, who did well in kind of the northern Orange County market, but then had to move. And then we brought on Kenny Rose, and Kenny was taking the place of Michael Tilbrook. He was kind of the gamble, and the gamble didn't work. I just think it was more of a maturity level. I was going to take the gamble because, you know, I felt that, hey, if I could have done it at his age. So I started FranNet when I was, I don't know, Leslie and I were about the same age at the time, about 23, 24 years old. I felt that if I could do it, you know, I could teach Kenny to do it, and it unfortunately didn't work. And so now we've added Craig Wells. Craig Wells, again, came from kind of an odd source. He was a franchisor that some of us used to work with many, many, many years ago called Cash Plus. He was his industry went through a big change. He was kind of reaching out, and, you know, I said, hey, Craig, what about joining my team? And so he did a couple months ago. There's a couple other people within the franchising industry that I tried to go after with no success. You guys would all know them. I'm not going to mention their names. But for the most part, I didn't do any advertising. I didn't go searching out on LinkedIn or anything for my associates. It was just people that I, for the most part, I just kind of knew in the industry and just kind of watched them, thought they were good people, and would just nurture them to become good associates. So that's really how we found people. Now, our business development people, those people we did search for, like Emily. Emily came from Express Personnel. It was, she just, you know, in all honesty, it was kind of a fluke at how good she has become. But she originally came on board as our admin person, and I just realized that she was just being totally underutilized. And so she's now developed into new business development, is actually working deals now too. And like I said, Dana Hartley, my sister, is now on business development. Obviously, you know where she came from. All of our other office admin have come through either connections or through Express Personnel as well. So those were always hired positions. As far as commission splits, we are on the typical 65, 75, 85 commission tiered level. As far as coaching our associates, we coach them on a weekly basis through their first kind of, I would say, half a dozen deals. And then once we see if they got this down, then we try to, then Paige and I kind of back off quite a bit and let them kind of run with it. Obviously, we're at their disposal to kind of help them with whatever needs arise. But we do hold weekly coaching calls as they are onboarding. And those really kind of kick in as soon as they start getting out of training out of Louisville. We do a monthly call with their whole group. And on that monthly call, we usually bring on a franchisor that everybody wants to get to know better. So our monthly call is next week is our group. We have British Swim School attending our call. Then we'll usually do a training topic. A lot of it is old hat, but like the training topic for our next week is just better follow-up, how to handle follow-up immediately after registering the client. And then we'll do kind of a group update session. for everybody to update each other on kind of what's going on. And everybody attends that call, everybody from admin to business development to all the associates and myself, and I tend to run the call. By the 10th of each month, all of my associates have to submit a report from the previous month. A couple of you have seen that. I know I see Grant Bullington's on the call. He's seen it. And basically what I'm doing is I'm tracking their metrics. I'm tracking their metrics on number of appointments that they held, where those appointments came from, number of seminars that they've held, where those seminars came from, number of deal, revenue, closing ratios, and it's a big, long spreadsheet that I've created to kind of track everybody's individual metrics, and then on the last page, it consolidates on the metrics to see how we're doing as a company. So I'm able to look at each individual associate, how they're individually doing, and it also compares their efforts compared to the previous year, so I can make sure that their behavior, they're having just as many appointments or just as many workshops, or if they're slipping, I can see where they're slipping, or if their, you know, dollar per deal is going down, I can watch that very closely so it doesn't slip away. So that is a report that they submit to me on a monthly basis by the 10th of each month. And then I put it all together. Keeping associates. So this is the part where some of you know that I have done this. Some of you don't. And this is probably something that you do not want getting out to your associates unless it's something that you want to do. I have instructed the people that I have done it with to keep their mouth shut, okay? So what I have done for my associates, not all of them, they have to earn this ability, is one of the challenges that we have in FranNet as far as keeping associates, especially if your associate is an achiever, is once they learn this business and you see if they're doing well, they want to own it. And if they can't own it, they leave. And so what I have created is a stock purchase plan within my company so that associates, once they achieve a certain level, a consistent level of business, usually around, if I see them doing, clipping on it at a rate of about $250,000 to $350,000 per year consistently, then I will offer them this plan. And that's where they're able to purchase stock over time, over a five-year time frame, so that they own a piece of the action. They never really become the franchisee. I always own the controlling share, but allows them to have, ownership rights in the company. And that way, it creates the ability for them to want to stick around. They want to do better, and therefore we don't lose them. And there's also kickers within the agreement that if they got some type of job that was just a job they couldn't refuse, there's a severe penalty if they accept that job. In California, we have, non-competes are, they're unenforceable. So if they were to go to a competitor suddenly, there is a severe penalty if they were to do that. Basically, they lose all the rights and we can purchase their stock back at a dramatic discount. Their spouse ownership rights, there's all kinds of things. There's something that I started off doing for Charlie McGee, about 3 years ago. And now we'll probably do it for Roxanne. And Craig, we probably won't do it with for a few years. We do not do it for admin or business development people, at least at this point, we don't do it. So we did create that stock purchase plan a few years ago. It probably took 6 to 9 months to create with the attorneys, but now we kind of got it down. I probably changed a little bit when I do it again. And like I said, I'll probably do it again here pretty quickly for Roxanne. So again, that's something probably most of you haven't done, but I think it has really, really helped as far as keeping good associates. And it's a way for kind of the owner to slowly but surely over time exit out of the business. Paige and I try to keep it fun and loose. Our group, it's so geographically spread out that we run pretty much virtually, with all of our associates. We have realized that with some associates, it helps to do FaceTime, Skype meetings. They kind of like to see us. Some of our associates just want to do things by text and by phone. And so you got to cater to each other's needs. We do an annual fund meeting. We did one here about a year ago in Bend. We'll probably do it in Bend, Oregon again this coming year, where it's you know, constructive training meeting, but we also make it kind of fun. So we try to do a lot of fun things with our group. I see Katie Fagan do it all the time. I see Leslie do it. I see Stacey Swift do it. So what that's one of the things that I would do is if you're not doing some type of annual or quarterly fund meeting, I would definitely start integrating this. The main reason as to why I see associates leave, so, it's just very simple. It's really due to revenue. If they can't do the number of deals to earn a living, then they're going to leave. And really, you want them to leave. And every time that I've asked for an associate to leave, it's been a very easy conversation because they don't want to stick around. We don't want them to stick around. So it's really just been a simple meeting or a simple phone call. And they're in agreement that, yeah, this just isn't working out. And I have had that happen a couple of times, unfortunately. So that's kind of the gist of it. Any questions from the group?
I do see one question in the chat, Lair. It's, can you elaborate on the typical 65, 75, 85 split?
Yep, I see that's coming from Grant. So the first $150,000 of gross revenue, it is a 65-35 split. 65 going to the associate, 35 to us. Every dollar between 150 to 200,000 is a 75-25 split. Every dollar over 200,000 is an 85-15 split.
Is that based on gross or net, Blair?
Gross.
So pre-royalty, that's what I mean by that.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
So, and what we also do, Leslie, I think that was you, is if there's any fees that need to be paid out, so like the FranFit program, Emily's probably done, I think, six FranFit deals over the past 6 to 9 months, and there's a $2,500 fee that gets paid to SBDC. She gets a commission off. We deduct the fee, and then the commission gets paid out. But as far as the 65, 75, 85, that is based on the gross commission. Does that make sense?
Yes. Thank you.
Yep.
So do we have any other questions about what Blair has said so far? Oh, I see another one. Brand Evangelist from John Tuberty. Do we have any thoughts on that one?
Yeah, so that's my new business development people. So Emily is new business development here in the Pacific Northwest, and then Dana's our new business development, or you can call them Brand Evangelist, down in Orange County. And basically their job is to attend as many networking meetings. They are also replacements if for whatever reason one of us can't make it to a seminar or workshop, or if, you know, we go on an extended vacation, they'll fill in for us. So they know also how to do workshops. They also know how to work clients. If there was some reason why one of us can't work a client, they're able to do it. And they are insured to do it too. We pay their, you know, insurance. But more importantly, their job is to find new lead sources that haven't been tapped into yet. And the way that we compensate them on that is that if they produce a lead source that obviously produces leads and we get deals from, for every deal that we do from that new lead source, they are given a $3,000 bonus, if you will, on top of their hourly or salary wages. And then if they end up having to work a client from beginning to end, so for instance, like if I went on a 2-month vacation and said, hey, Emily, can you work any new clients over the next couple of months? And so everything keeps running along. Since they have a base salary pay, they keep 30% of the commission and 70% of the commission comes to me as the owner.
Okay,
I see another one here.
That one.
Well, hold on. There's a couple that just came through. Frank, can you address expenses covered, how lead sources are divvied up, and how online leads may be handled? Okay, so can you address expenses covered? So I, for employees, we cover all expenses, whether it's travel, commute, networking expenses, national meeting expenses, I cover it all because they're an employee. If it's an associate, they cover their own expenses 100%. Lead sources are divvied. So we divvy up our lead sources for the most part by territory. Yeah, it's all done by territory and how online leads may be handled. That's really up to each associate. So Charlie likes to handle his own online leads. One of my ways of helping out Emily is I have her handle all of my online leads. Dana down in Orange County, she handles all Paige's online leads and Craig's. And then Roxanne handles her own online leads. A number of them used to use the call center when our call center was around, but a lot of them like to handle their own online leads. They're quite frankly, there aren't a lot for our group. We don't get nearly as many online leads as the Midwest or East Coast offices. So it's only a couple of months, so it's not that big of a deal. Grant, can you walk me through what it looks like to onboard, train, and monitor a new associate in a remote part of the territory? 1.5 hour flight, how many hours required? Okay, so we work closely with Megan. Megan does a lot of work as far as the pre-training before they come out to Louisville. We also do pre-training, so as you know, there's an entire pre-training checklist. Then the associate will go out to Louisville for their training, and then we work with the associate on a weekly basis, and more if needed. So we set up a standing one-hour coaching call every week, and I tend to do them on Mondays since I tend to not do seminars or meet with clients on Mondays. So I'll block it same hour every week for the new associate and I to work with each other. And in the beginning, it's mainly on marketing for them to help them get leads. And then once they start getting leads, I'll keep coaching them on getting the PFA. Then once the PFA, we'll walk through a bunch of PFAs. If I have a client meeting or if I have PFAs coming in, I'll walk them through those. And once they start developing a pipeline, Grant, then we start working on coaching the clients. So they'll give me an update on where all their clients are at. We'll break them down between A, B, and C clients and obviously spend more attention to the A's and B's and then how are we going to get rid of the C's. And then we also spend time on how we're going to keep filling up their pipeline. And so I'm a big believer that each associate should have at least 3 to 4 events every month that they can try to drive clients to, whether it's outplacement or a public workshop, or if they're rural grants, it would be maybe a webinar. I will go to their office at least a couple times over the first few months just to watch them in person do client meetings, watch them in person do seminars, and obviously provide any coaching or critique. So, and I usually find that it takes a good 6 to 12 months of coaching and mentoring a new associate before they get it. Because they'll usually get their first deal done somewhere between 6 and 9 months, and then probably 1 or 2 more between months 9 and 12. So, good question, Grant. So, yeah, it does require flight time. So, I did that with Charlie Grant when he was in Seattle. I would fly up to Seattle a few times in the first 6 to 9 months.
Hey, Blair, it's Leslie. Can I ask you a couple questions? Can you talk about how you're compensating Dana and Emily? And especially, it sounds like Emily, she's also doing some deals. So how does that comp plan look like for her? And are you guys offering 401k, you know, benefits? You know, how do you talk about advancement, that sort of a thing, please?
So my goal for my group, other than admin, if you are a new business development person or an associate, I want you to have the ability to make six figures or more. Okay. And Emily, when she came to me, you know, she was happy with $30,000 to $50,000 at the time. So she came on as like an hourly employee. And once I realized her talent, I said, Emily, would you believe me if I could get you to $100,000 to $150,000 of personal income per year? She just about blew her mind. And I said, trust me, I'll create a plan to do it. And so obviously that was doing more than just new business development. It was, hey, if you can find new lead sources and actually take the client from beginning to end, I'll give you a commission. And so, like I said earlier, I give her a commission of 30% of the gross after royalties, and I keep 70%. But that's because she receives a base salary. Now, her base salary is $50,000 per year. She does not get 401k. She does not get medical. She doesn't need it because her husband has it. We did not provide that to any of our admin either. My sister Dana, she doesn't really care. She doesn't need the money. So she's on an hourly basis down there. So
okay,
she's a little bit different scenario. But I think that, you know, to get the talent that you want for a new business development person, you probably got to show them a path of, hey, how can you make $100,000 or more? Otherwise, they'll look around elsewhere. So you got to be willing to pay a fairly good base and then commission on top of that. And I figure, hey, if they can get the commissions, it's a win-win for everybody.
So, and just to be, I want to get the numbers right. So, I guess back to what we said a little bit earlier, in the 65, 75, 85, that's on the gross. And did I hear you just say that this 30% is on the net after royalty?
For Emily, yes.
Okay.
So, because Emily's different because she receives a base.
Right. Okay. So hers is based on net, not on gross.
Correct.
Net. And in addition to that, if she is generating a lead source, but you're working the client or an associate is working somebody else's, she still gets a $3,000 bonus per deal from the source she generated. Did I hear that right?
That is correct. Like okay. There's a church group in Portland that I didn't even know existed. And it's become a very good lead source. And we probably do, I don't know, 3 to 4 deals a year out of this one church group. And so I said, hey, Emily, that's great work. So every time I do one of those deals from a church group, here's $3,000. So,
mm-hmm.
And it's put right onto her paycheck.
So she's still a W-2 employee. There isn't W-2 plus some kind of 1099 relationship. Is that right?
No, Emily is W-2, Dana is W-2, and our admin, call it W-2, all associates are 1099, and they have their own companies.
Mm-hmm.
Hold on. Jack just brought something up. Jack, how is your time split between managing, training, coaching, and doing deals? Okay, so that's a choice, Jack, that I had to make. There's almost so much bandwidth, and Jack, as you know, a few years ago, I had to start kind of backing off mentally for my own mental health. Actually, a few of you know that. So I made the conscious change that, hey, I'm just going to start, I'm not going to work as hard producing my own deals, but I'm going to take on more coaching, more. There you go. You found it, Megan.
Okay.
what
is it?
So I would say it's probably 30. Call it 33, Jack. 33% of my time is coaching and mentoring. 33% is doing my own deals. And 33% is on general management of the business. And my goal is really to kind of keep backing away. So as if I can keep getting the business ramping up, and I think the magical number is 2 million. If I can get the company up to 2 million or more per year, I think I can stop back, or I can stop working deals myself, and the company will be generating the profit that I've always wanted. So now I'll just be mainly from a more of a chairmanship level, management level. Hold on. Chairperson, I'll bring it up. Frank Dunn, for associates, ever explore a draw against commission as an incentivizer? Yes, Frank. I did do that with Kenny Rose, and Kenny did not work out. I have found that if somebody needs to take a draw, they probably don't have the money to do this, and they're just running so squeaky lean, whereas they need to be investing money in their market. And so not only did I do some, did we do draws against commission, but we also, you know, obviously did some marketing infrastructure, marketing, investments to help them. And each time we did that, Frank, the associate did not work out. So thankfully, as far as money was concerned, it was probably a break even for us by the time that associate left. But then you got to consider the time of finding somebody else, training somebody, and that dead time in that market of why that happens. So I think you need to find somebody who is financially stable, is really driven. Generally, that's your achievers, and you know what your achievers are going to want. 3 to 5 years into this, they're going to want to own a piece of the action. So that's the reason why we did that stock purchase plan.
So on that note, Blair, Leslie again, I think this is just a topic of conversation, I think, for a lot of us, is going back to the 6 to 9 months that really takes to onboard someone and do it well. That's you know, is easily what it took for me to onboard Julie, and she's, you know, a fantastic associate. And that achiever type, you know, I think something we have to look at is they have a lot of other choices. You know, there's a growing number of competing broker networks, and I think a number of us have a fear of training our competition. That it may just – so I think it's a worthy conversation of, you know, who's really a good fit for us versus, you know, someone who may be a better – that just is going to potentially creating our own competition. Who's going to stick with us versus going to a competing broker network as an associate? I think that's a worthy conversation.
Yeah. So, again, like I said, I think your achievers are going to be looking at those other broker networks. And so that's why I put that – if they perform, that's why I did that stock purchase plan, was to keep them, because I don't want them going to other broker networks or, you know, being competition for us or taking some job if it's offered to them. Now, if it's some job that's just out of the world, yeah, go for it. Don't blame you. You know, I think that stock purchase agreement is what's really helped my group out. And some of you may fight that all day long. You know, you don't want to sell shares of your business. I get it. It took me a long time to be able to bite that bullet. But I think it's helped out quite a bit. I have found that if they are more belonger achievers, like Roxanne and Charlie are more belonger achievers, they're, you know, that need to really build wealth quickly, it's just not there. You know, they're more about, you know, being able to take care of their family. And the big incentive for them coming out of their previous roles was their time flexibility that they suddenly have within FranNet to be able to spend with family. So that was a huge incentive to them.
Yeah, Julie is a belonger achiever as well. And she, you know, came into this wanting flexibility, and she came into this wanting to be a part of a team. You know, she looked at other networks, but I think she liked the idea of having people helping her and her being able to do stuff with, do marketing events. You know, the belonger person, you know, likes the team aspect too. I think that's been part of the glue as well.
Yep, absolutely. That's correct. Grant just asked a question. At what point revenue number of associates does it make sense to bring on admin support staff? I would say if you're doing $250,000 or more per year in gross revenue, you definitely should have an admin support staff. Now, whether they're full-time or part-time, that's up to you. I would say once you have at least one or two associates, I would start seriously considering bringing on a beyond part-time to full-time admin staff. And you're probably doing somewhere between $250,000 to $500,000 in annual revenue at that point.
Blair, do your associates, 1099, are they contributing to the admin expenses? Are you covering all of that? How is that handled in your office?
Good point. Sorry, I didn't bring that up. So, yes, they do. So each one pays quarterly in advance $250 per month to have access to our admin. And so we invoice them every quarter for that. And they can drop out of it at any time. If they say, hey, I want to do it myself, they can. But as long as they're using it, they pay for it. It's $250 a month, which is a pretty good deal for them.
That is a good deal.
So I didn't want it to, I want them to use it, so I didn't want them to, I didn't want to charge them so much for it that it created a barrier. But at the same time, I want them to pay for it so that they would use it. So, so I felt, you know, $250, you know, that's pretty fair. So,
and
sorry,
they pay
I didn't bring that up
earlier. They pay their own travel, all those, you know, their own marketing expenses, their own travel. And could you just address other expenses that your 1099ers?
Yeah, so if it's an associate, the 1099ers, they pay all their expenses across the board. If it's a W-2 employee, we pay all their expenses across the board. They have to go to one of the two national meetings per year. They tend to go to both. All have asked for extra training, like the Sandler training, any other groups that we as Franet put together, they all want to attend. So they don't really have an issue with it. So hopefully that answered your question, Leslie.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what I'm going to do is I'm just going to go ahead and show you guys the survey answers because I think a lot of it ties into what we're all talking about, and I want you guys to kind of see what the responses were because it's all lining up a lot with what Blair is saying. So, Blair, do you mind if I go ahead and dive a little bit into these results?
Go for it.
Okay. So let me pull up this PowerPoint that I put together. So the kind of main questions that we've been covering are, you know, where do you look? Where do you start? What are the qualities that you're looking for? What do those initial conversations sound like so that you can frame their expectations and their roles correctly? What are their backgrounds? Are they unemployed when you find them? Reasons that they leave? These are the questions that everybody has, right? So this is the answers that I got back. On the question of where to find them, many people are finding them at their networking events. Their referral partners are sending them over. They could be former or existing clients. Other trusted advisors, someone actually said ladders.com had a couple good associates come from there. And then we also had someone say that their job description that they had for their associates was given to their referral sources and other contacts so that they can better send you people that you really want and whatever needs you're trying to solve with that associate. So, and that's happened when I've been listening a little bit to the people that have been coming to the past few trainings. It's funny how many people, it's just they found them or they were monitoring them, you know, monitoring these different sources, watching these people at networking events or, like, kind of keeping an eye on one of their clients because they felt like they would be a good fit for their team. So it's definitely something I've found happens over time, you know, or they come to you and it just kind of works out. And I wish there was a better science to that, but it's more of just kind of, you know, looking in the circles that you're in a lot, and then having those trusted either advisors or referral partners kind of give you a heads up that there might be somebody in their area. Does anybody have anything to add or comment on this particular topic right here? Okay. So some of the qualities that you guys have said that you look for that have found to be a good fit for the team is understanding what is involved with running a small business. So I think this goes back to what Blair was saying with Kenny of not being mature enough or maybe not having that business background. So the ability to, and desire to network, so I think that's an interesting qualifier. So you can network, but do you want to? You know, so that's kind of something that we want to make sure that they're still willing to do and are excited about. Not sure why it's cutting off there. But Leslie, that was your response there with the belonger achiever working well. And for some reason it cut that off, but it says that basically it's fitting where you are trying to fill in and maybe even your weaknesses. So the teams that I've seen have the best, at least culture or interaction with each other, are the ones that are kind of filling in each other's weaknesses. There may be an opposite buyer motive or an opposite personality characteristic or something where you guys can help each other out either in sharing advice or, you know, working through a challenge and different things like that so that you guys can help each other grow in those ways. Disarming / trusting, personality, ethical, again, the business background. So let me see if it cut off over here. Okay, cut off all of them. Anyway, so not in a dire need of a first paycheck. So that they have a spouse that can cover the personal living expenses, the kind of need to want money, but not so desperate that they're going to take a job when they are finding that it actually is going to take 9 months to get their first deal or a year. So that's a really big part of a new associate is the income. And so that's one thing that really needs to be there when you're looking for somebody. Obviously, articulate, public speaker, personable, professional, can relate to the client is what's being cut off there. So a lot of the, you know, the former clients are good for the reason that they can kind of be like their own B campaign and promote FriendNet through the fact that they themselves were customers here and had a great experience. So that's one thing. And then the sincere desire to help people. So that's just the passion. You know, if they're passionate about what they're going to be doing, that's going to be a motivating factor in itself. More background in the group or area that's needed. So that's another part of trying to fill in your weaknesses or trying to help you accomplish something that maybe isn't happening in your area currently or something you're trying to get into. Industry background. Some people don't have it really as a hard requirement. Other people do. I have noticed lately that a lot of our associates do have industry background. It really helps them with understanding us better and how we fit into the industry. The people that I've trained that don't have any industry background experience at all, they have a lot of learning and catching up to do, so it might take them a little bit longer to get that first deal because not only do they have to learn FriendNet's process, but they have to learn everything else about the industry and how everything works and the lingo and all the networking they're probably going to have to do, and their database is going to have to be built from scratch. So there's a lot of things that are probably going to take them longer to catch up with, and that's something where you might have to pre-frame that in your discussions with them too early on so they are aware of that. When you guys are talking to these people in the beginning, a lot of you have made sure that you have to frame the fact that they are going to go 6 to 12 months without income. And a lot of people that I train have told me that, you know, oh, well, that's what I was told, that I'm going to be better. I'm going to be faster. I'm going to be 3 months. And I'm like, well, that's really great, but, you know, it's really not what happens. It's very rare. So the fact that some people come in thinking that they're going to exceed expectations, like that's not really what's going to happen to them because they are better or whatever. I think that maybe they're not seeing the expectations as clearly as they should be. I think maybe those are the people that take jobs or, you know, get frustrated and quit. So that's something very important to frame. You know, they have to tell you why they were interested in business ownership, franchising in particular. What do they not like about what they're doing now? So you can maybe see if they're going to be a good fit for your team. And then why were they interested in that role? How do you feel about helping people with career decisions? Because it's a very difficult time for people. It's a big decision to make. Asking questions about their backgrounds. And the rest of that is I want to know what positions they've had in the past where they were able to control their own schedule and get comfortable without a guaranteed salary. So when I'm kind of talking to the new associates before they come to training and after they come to training, I'm trying to make sure that they, you know, they're still keeping that level of I'm able to maintain my own time. I'm able to have that time management skill along with being able to fill my calendar with things. And, you know, it can go both ways. They overwhelm themselves or they don't do enough. So, you know, it's kind of helping them balance that, too, if you might see that coming up as a problem. And if they've had positions in the past where they've had to do something like that, that always makes it easier for them to continue doing what they're used to doing in that way. Let's see. I'm going to go ahead and skip through some of this because it's a lot of, and I'm going to send you all this PowerPoint afterwards so you can read through it, but this is kind of helping you guys see what other people talk about in those first couple conversations. But as far as framing expectations, the role is really the same as far as an associate. They're still going to be trying to find lead sources. They're going to be networking. They're going to be having a client meeting. They're going to be managing the franchisor. So, you know, it's just making sure that they understand that. The background, if I can get the slide to go. Okay. So, again, this kind of goes to where you find them. A lot of people are, they come from a corporate background or that they've owned their own business or have been consultants in the past. Sales or relationship sales, a business where they've dealt with C-level executives, an owner before, a top franchisee. So, again, the ones that have the franchise industry experience are going to mesh a little bit easier. They're going to transition easier. But really, it's kind of across the board. Oh, okay, that went on without me. Getting to this slide, they're really not unemployed is the point of that current background. They're not really coming to you after being unemployed for a little while. Some people have, and the time was only like a couple months that they were unemployed. It hasn't like they've been a year unemployed and looking still. A couple other people have said that they had just lost a job, like a franchise sales job. They had voluntarily resigned. As this person said here, their current and most successful associates have other revenue streams that they're looking to replace and add to. So it's always better success, if they're not looking to make money quickly, because there is that kind of mystery of you know, how fast they're going to adapt to it and all the other factors that play into it. We've kind of gone over why they leave. Some of these things are out of your hands, like if they move or if another job kind of presents itself and it's really great, they can't deny it. But some of these other things, like don't like the required networking and prospecting required. I mean, was it because they weren't aware of how much they would have to do? Was it because they didn't have that experience in the past? You know, if maybe that could have been something that was pre-framed better. Don't like the inconsistency. Again, they would have been pre-framed with this, so, you know, where did they go wrong in the fact that they just not get it, or were they not letting that sink in too much? The administrative infrastructure, so from my feedback that I've heard, administrative help goes so far, and it's really hard for new associates to afford bringing on their own virtual assistant or assistant of any kind. But it does give them such an enormous advantage as far as if they don't have to worry about learning FranConnect as much right off the bat, if they don't have to worry about doing all that setting up and busy work that comes with not having an admin, it does take a lot away from them because they're adding that on top of their workload. So the ones that go into offices where that's already provided for them or where they, you know, where something's worked out in that way where they have that to rely on, I've seen just a huge weight lifted off of them, and then they can really spend their time focusing on getting better at the process. So I think that's a really great thing to offer in some form or another, or, you know, maybe it's just in the beginning to get everything set up for them. I don't know, but it's definitely for the people who I've seen use that and have that ability, it's been very helpful for them. talked a little bit about like incentives or ways of helping. I agree with what Blair said about providing them with lead sources. So if you're kind of like, all right, well, just go get on Tiger, and they just go out there and they're like lost and confused. If they have a target, if they have something already there that they can help to jumpstart their practice, that's a really great tool for them as well to start and get and start feeling good about it. Continuous coaching. So again, the offices that do well are the ones that train together and coach together and share best practices and are in constant communication. So even if you are spread out, you know, the virtual option is still there, and it's really important that you all are in communication with each other so you don't feel isolated, or if you have a challenge, you're not afraid to ask your office owner or another team member. So that culture of being able to share and lean on each other is important as well to foster. So I've seen offices where the associates really don't talk to each other. And, you know, for some people it works. You know, if your associate works better hands-off, you know, on their own, then that's fine. But especially if you have a belonger achiever or any type of belonger in your team, they're going to want to have that relationship there so that they can know that they can lean on everybody there to learn on and grow personally. So the weekly calls, monthly training, speakers at their training, you know, all of that's great. And then I think on this side, it's just kind of like how people, you know, what they cover. So it's always going to be a little bit different on what you feel you can cover and what you want to cover, and that's totally up to you. And I'll send this guys so you guys can read on this a little bit more about what some other people do as far as splits and how they divide things up. The last little bit of the survey that I asked you guys is just kind of further thoughts, you know, what else do you think other people should know? And the main thing that came from this is it takes time. All of it takes a lot of time to bring someone new on, not just for them about taking a year to do a deal, but just for the training and to incorporate them into your team and to help them stay on track. And, you know, you got to really devote a lot of effort to those weekly calls and making sure that they are comfortable with what they're doing, flying out if you have to, and sitting in a training. In my pre-training, I tell them that, you know, the first few seminars that you do, it's going to be really helpful if your offer zoner is there, because then they can tell you that you're doing this weird snapping thing with your hand when you talk, or you're not giving eye contact, or you don't have a very engaging presence. You can't really tell those people those things unless you're there seeing it for yourself. So, you know, I try to make sure that they are as in touch with you as possible in the beginning so that whatever bad habit is forming right off the bat, you can catch it quickly and then help reform whatever that is. So, you know, we can read through all these on your own, but the main point there is it just takes time for things to develop. So you got to be patient. You got to help them be patient, because it can be really frustrating, especially when they're doing everything right and then things pop up that they can't control either, like maybe the franchisor messes up the deal or the client drops out, you know, things like that. So being the cheerleader is also a big part of that as well. And the fun outings, like with what Blair was saying, that's a really awesome component. And I think that it would just make the culture of your team even better, and it would bring more motivation in, and I'm all about making that happen as well. So I just wanted to share some of those things so you guys could see what you guys responded with. And I'll make sure the screen doesn't do that to you guys when I send out the PowerPoint. But is there any further thoughts, questions, concerns about a team, about the associates that you have and want to bring on, and thoughts and all those things? And what are some things that we've missed that you want to talk about?
I'd like to talk about buying internet leads that perhaps can be a lead source for associates to work. I know many of us have tried that on and off and on and off. I'm wondering if there's any new experiences with that or new ideas to purchase leads that associates can work as part of the benefit of being a part of FranNet versus, you know, doing so through a competitor. Any thoughts on that? Anybody?
Don't all jump at once now. Hmm. So is that just people haven't been buying internet leads? Is that what I take from everyone's silence?
No, it's more, look, I mean, God knows, I probably could have bought another small house with the amount of money I've spent on buying internet leads, or at least a very nice car. I just haven't figured it out. I mean, I think we've all been talking about for years that deals are bought, you know, with these internet leads. We just haven't figured it out. And I would love nothing more than to do what Leslie's thinking, which is figure out the ratios, figure out the lead flow that's needed to hire somebody to do nothing but work online internet leads. Just haven't figured it out.
Yeah, me neither.
I don't think – I talked to John Blair about this recently, too, and I think his response is always the same of the fact that it's hard to find quality in that way. I think a lot of people have bought a lot of internet leads, and it just hasn't been the people that we need, or it just hasn't gone anywhere. And I don't think he's showed or given me any new highlights on that topic. I think it's still pretty much the same. We haven't found the key to that quite yet.
Okay, thanks. Mm-hmm. Megan, are you going to type all this stuff up? I know
yes.
Blair gave a lot of really cool information, you know, mm-hmm. comp, et cetera. Will you be typing all that up and sharing with us?
Yeah, I was planning on going through this again and sending this out in a more, like, Word document along with this PowerPoint that you see here and the survey.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything else on your guys' mind while we have everybody here to kind of share thoughts on? I also think another important thing to keep in mind as well is when you're bringing on a new associate, it's different for people who are trying, who, you know, it's their business is young and they're trying to grow out their business or expand it, or as Blair is saying, to kind of get to a point where you can really just step back. And then the people who are trying to phase out and bring on maybe a new associate to take over the business. Are there any thoughts on how you would maybe look at this differently when it comes to bringing on somebody to eventually take over the business? I'll tell you my thoughts are it's probably not too much different in the way of you're probably still going to need somebody with the same type of background and drive and, you know, the type of things that we have determined make a good associate as far as knowing the industry, having that experience to rely on. But when it comes to taking over the business, if you're thinking about that and you're thinking, oh, maybe this associate can one day replace me or however you're thinking about it, you know, it's something where, you know, they're going to have the same characteristics, but they have to be able to be on the same page with you on the end game. So you're going to be pre-framing things differently. You're going to be making sure that they have that in their sights as well. So they're looking at the long-term game plan, that they're able to be a team leader. So that's when they eventually want to bring on new associates and so forth. So any other thoughts on that?
You know, Megan, that might be, if you're talking about exiting the business, that might be a whole other call you want to do. I think I saw, like, Dick Munson's on this call. I know he's done it. A couple others have done it successfully. They can share the ways that they did it.
Okay. Good point. Okay, guys, well, if there's no other thoughts, thank you so much for tuning in. As Leslie said, I will send out the kind of notes from this as well as the PowerPoint and the recordings that you guys can use it. So thank you, Blair, for sharing your insights.
You bet.
And everybody have a great rest of your day. Thank you.
Thanks, Megan.
Thanks, Blair.
Thanks, Megan.